Almost anybody, reading this account, will, perhaps regretfully, perhaps not, say farewell to our idea of a teleported boy. That settles it. But nothing ever has settled anything, except relatively to a desire for settlement, and if ours is a desire for unsettlement, we have assurance that we, or any other theorist, can find in the uncertainties of any human document, whether supposed to have been dictated from on high, or written by a boy, material for thinking as our theories require. We note in Caspar's story a statement that he had no idea of time. That is refreshing to our wilting theory. We may think that he had lived in a small, dark room all his life of which he had remembrance, and that that may have been a period of only a few weeks. We pick upon his statement that once he had been struck for being noisy. To us that means that he had been confined, not in a cell, or a dungeon, but in a room in a house, with neighbors around, and that there was somebody's fear that sounds from him would attract attention or that there were neighbors so close to this place that the imprisonment of a boy could not have been kept a secret more than a few weeks. We're not satisfied. We hunt for direct data for thinking that, if Caspar Hauser had been confined in a dark room, it had not been for more than a few weeks. He had a healthy color, Hildel. He had a very healthy color, he did not appear pale or delicate, like one who had been some time in confinement, policeman Wust. According to all that can be learned of another case, a man, naked, almost helpless, perhaps in a state of hypnosis so profound that also it was physical, so that he could scarcely walk, and in whom memory was obliterated so that he did not know enough to make his way along a road, which he crossed, appeared near Petersfield, Hampshire, February 21, 1920. If we can think that a peasant, near Nuremberg, found on his farm a boy in a similar condition, and took him in, then considering him an imbecile, and wanting to get rid of him, keeping him in confinement, fearing he might be held responsible for him, then writing two letters that would explain an abandonment in commonplace terms that would not excite inquiry, but not being skillful in such matters, that looks as if we're explaining somewhat. Because of the continuation of Caspar's story, we think that this place was near Nuremberg. Whit Monday was a holiday, and the farmers, or the neighbors, were probably not laboring in the fields, so this was the day for the shifting of the supposed imbecile. Upon this day, as told by Caspar, the man carried the boy from the dark room, and carried, or led, him, compelling him to keep his eyes downward, toward Nuremberg. Caspar's clothes were changed for the abandonment. Perhaps he had been found naked, and had been given makeshift garments. Perhaps he had been found in clothes, of cut and texture that were remarkable and that would have caused inquiry. The clothes that were given to him were a peasant's. It was noted in Nuremberg that they seemed not to belong to him, because Caspar was not a peasant boy, judging by the softness of his hands, von Feuerbach. The story has resemblances to the story of the English boy of Nepal. In each case somebody got rid of a boy, and in each case it is probable that a false story was told. If the man in Caspar's case had the 10 children that, to excuse an abandonment, he told of, there'd have been small chance for him to keep his secret. There are differences in these two stories. It will be my expression that they came about because of the wide difference in attention that was attracted. October 17, 1829 Caspar was found in the cellar of Professor Dahmer's house, bleeding from a cut in the forehead. He said that a man in a black mask had appeared suddenly, and had stabbed him. It has been explained that this was attempted suicide. But stabbing oneself in the forehead is a queer way to attempt suicide, and in Nuremberg arose a belief that Caspar's life was in danger from unknown enemies, and 2 policemen were assigned to guard him. Upon an afternoon in May, 1831, one of these policemen, while in one room, heard a pistol shot, in another room. He ran there, and found Caspar again wounded in the forehead. Caspar said that it was an accident, that he had climbed upon the back of a chair, and, reaching for a book, had slipped, and, catching out wildly, had grasped a pistol that was hanging on the wall, discharging it. December 14, 1833, Caspar Hauser ran from a park, crying that he had been stabbed. Deeply wounded in his side, he was taken to his home. The park, which was covered with new fallen snow, was searched, but no weapon was found, and only Caspar's footprints were seen in the snow. Two of the attending physicians gave their opinion that Caspar could not so have injured himself. The opinion of the third physician was an indirect accusation of suicide, that the blow had been struck by a left-handed person. Caspar was not left-handed, but was ambidextrous. Caspar lay on his bed, with his usual publicity. He was surrounded by tormentors, who urged him to gasp plugs in his story. He was the only human being who had been in the park, according to the testimony of the snow tracks. It was not only Caspar who was wounded. There was a wound in circumstances. Tormentors urged him to confess, so that in terms of the known they could fill out his story. Faith in confessions and the desire to end a mystery with a confession are so intense that some writers have said that Caspar did confess. As a confession, they have interpreted his protest against his accusers, "My God! That I should so die in shame and disgrace." Caspar Hauser died. The point of his heart had been pierced by something that had cut through the diaphragm, penetrating stomach and liver. In the opinion of two of the doctors and of many of the people of Nuremberg, this wound could not have been self-inflicted. Rewards for the capture of an assassin were offered. Again, throughout Germany, posters appeared in public places, and in Germany and other countries there were renewed outbursts of pamphlets. The boy appeared as if from the clouds, and nothing more was learned. It was Caspar's story that a man in the park had stabbed him. If anybody prefers to think that it cannot be maintained that there was only one track of footprints in the snow, let him look up various accounts, and he will find assurances any way he wants to find them. For almost every statement that I have made, just as good authority for denying it, as for stating it, can be found, provided any two conflicting theories depend upon it. One can read that Caspar Hauser was highly intelligent or brilliant. One can read that the autopsy showed that his brain was atrophied to the size of a small animal's, accounting for his idiocy. One comes upon just about what one comes upon in looking up any other matter of history. It is said that history is a science. I think that it must be. A great deal, such as Caspar's alleged ability to see in the dark, and his aversion to eating meat, and his inability to walk would be understandable, if could be accepted the popular theory that Caspar Hauser was the rightful Crown Prince of Bavaria, who for political reasons had been kept for 16 or 17 years in a dungeon. There would be an explanation for two alleged attacks upon him. But see back to his own story of confinement in a house, or a peasant's hut, near Nuremberg, where probably his imprisonment could not have been kept secret more than a few weeks. See testimony by Hiltel and Wust. See back to a great deal more in this book. The Wolf of Shotley Bridge, and the Wolf of Cumwinton, or that something removed one wolf and procured another wolf to end a mystery that was attracting too much attention. It was said that Caspar Hauser was murdered to suppress political disclosures. If it be thinkable that Caspar was murdered to suppress a mystery, whether political, or not so easily defined, there are statements that support the idea that also some of the inhabitants of Nuremberg, who were prominent in Caspar's affairs, were murdered. One can read that von Feuerbach was murdered, or one can read that von Feuerbach died of a paralytic stroke. C. Evans, Caspar Hauser, p. 150, that, soon after the death of Caspar Hauser, several persons, who had shown much interest in his case, died, and that it was told in Nuremberg that they had been poisoned. They were Mayor Binder, Dr. Osterhauser, Dr. Prue, and Dr. Albert. Caspar Hauser showed such an utter deficiency of words and ideas, such perfect ignorance of the commonest things and appearances of nature, and such horror of all customs, conveniences, and necessities of civilized life, and, withal, such extraordinary peculiarities in his social, mental, and physical disposition, that one might feel oneself driven to the alternative of believing him to be a citizen of another planet, transferred by some miracle to our own, von Feuerbach. Part 2. 20. According to appearances, this Earth is a central body, within a revolving, starry globe. But am I going to judge by appearances? But everything of the opposing doctrine is judgment by other appearances. Everybody who argues against judging by appearances bases his argument upon other appearances. Monistically, it can be shown that everybody who argues against anything bases his argument upon some degree or aspect of whatever he opposes. Everybody who is attacking something is sailing on a windmill, while denouncing merry-go-rounds. You can't judge by appearances, say the astronomers. Sun and stars seem to go around this Earth, but they are like a field that seems to go past a train, whereas it is the train that is passing the field. Judging by this appearance, they say that we cannot judge by appearances.